followed my footsteps to the sparkling sands of...
Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest this evening, John Daniel. His book, Scarlet and the Beast, actually it's a 3-volume book, and we do carry it here at Radio Liberty if you're interested in it. Our telephone number, 464-8295, or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 464-8295, or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And this is probably the most extensive expose of the Masonic influence, and you'll find, for instance, the man who created the CIA was a highly placed Mason, Alan Dulles. Isn't that right, John?
Right.
And, of course, so many of the people who had actually gone to Europe, along with Colonel House back in 1918-1919, to sign the Versailles Treaty. And then, of course, at that time, they met with the representatives of the English roundtable group, so-called Milner's Men, decided that they had to join the two English-speaking empires together, the American, the British, and, of course, in England, they created the Royal Institutes for International Affairs. In the United States, they created an organization which came to be known as the Council on Foreign Relations, which, according to Professor Quigley, on pages 951 and 952 of Tragedy and Hope, was simply a front organization for the small English roundtable group and, of course, for J.P. Morgan Bank. And, of course, you need to have a copy of Tragedy and Hope at your side of your radio so that you can check out to see if I'm telling you what's true or what's not. But Tragedy and Hope is must reading. And of course, this is a very, very important book we're talking about tonight. And you may very well want to get a copy of it and keep it at your bedside as well, because then you can begin to see this interplay between the Council on Foreign Relations, the Roundtable, and the Masons. Now, what is the relationship between the Council on Foreign Relations and the Masons? You mentioned earlier that Cecil Rhodes had been a Mason, that Milner, then, who carried on the Rhodes Trust and the Rhodes Secret Society, himself was a Mason. And then, is there today within the Council on Foreign Relations a strong Masonic influence?
It doesn't have to be. They have taken over our universities, and all you have to do is be left of center, and you can become a member. If you are anywhere right and you become a member, before long you will do their bidding or your sins will be exposed. And but I want to go back to the League of Nations and the United Nations, because here we have the war between English and French Freemasonry.
All right, why don't you pick it up there then?
Okay, the League of Nations, actually the phrase League of Nations was founded or created in 1913 in French Freemasonry. It didn't come from our President Woodrow Wilson. It's only given to him as an honorary thing for because of what he did in bringing the United States into the World War One. But the League of Nations, before Woodrow Wilson became a president, started in French Freemasonry. It even started before First World War, as I said, 1913. And they planned to make this League of Nations after this war. They knew that they were going to create a war. And I document this in the book.
So how do you document? What's the documentation?
I go into the assassination of Duke Ferdinand of Hungary.
And, of course, that was actually a Masonic lodge, wasn't
that
it?
That was
the
Masonic.
Black man, right?
Masons furnished the weapons.
That's you're talking about Archduke Ferdinand?
Right, Archduke Ferdinand. Masons.
Austria-Hungary, right.
Right. Masons furnished the weapons, and it was Masons that pulled the trigger and threw the bombs. And what we don't hear in our history books, throughout World War One, in Hungary, was the trial for these assassins, and they were sent into prison, and they died in prison. And I quote the transcript from that trial of them admitting they were Masons, they were funded by Freemasons, their weapons were given to them by Freemasons, and the whole purpose of killing Duke Ferdinand was to trigger a war, a world war. They didn't call it a world war at that time, but to to trigger a European war so that they could, so Freemasonry could take over all nations in one fell swoop rather than go by nation by nation.
I think it's very interesting. I have a copy, actually two copies in my library of the autobiography of Kaiser Wilhelm. And in that book, he actually talks about how he had been informed that prior to the First World War, meetings had been held at the Masonic Lodges of the Grand Orient to plan the First World War.
Yes.
And, of course, their purpose was to destroy the Austro-Hungarian Empire and Germany, and, of course, to bring about this world government. So you can be, and this is what was said by the German Kaiser, because he never understood. I mean, the war didn't make any sense to him, but then it didn't make any sense to the people in the United States, didn't make any sense to the people in England, didn't make sense to the people in France or Russia. Nobody wanted the war other than these secret societies who dreamed this dream of a one-world government under their control.
Exactly. And so after the war, then the League of Nations was to bring peace around the world.
Right.
And English Freemasonry boycotted it. They didn't want to have anything to do with it because they didn't control it. Their enemy, French Freemasonry, controlled it. And so this is where the round tables went to the League of Nations and to a hotel after the peace conference, and they created the Council on Foreign Relations.
That was the Majestic Hotel in Paris.
That was in the Majestic Hotel,
right.
And the whole purpose was to infiltrate or destroy the League of Nations and create a United Nations that English Freemasonry would control. And this is where they funded Hitler. The express purpose of funding Hitler and bringing on World War II was to destroy the League of Nations, and they were successful in that.
You sure were. Let's go to Tony. Hi, Tony. How you doing?
Oh, pretty good. Thank you. You were talking about the origins of World War One here as far as Masonic influence.
Right.
And in the past, you've talked about the Carnegie Institute for Peace as far as in the congressional investigation that, like, in I believe it was in 1910 about how they...
1908 and 1999. And the quotation comes from Norman Dodd, who had had it, one of his agents... Miss Catherine Casey, Catherine Casey, go through the records of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, and even before it was incorporated, when they were still holding meetings preparatory to incorporation, they were planning on creating a war.
Right. Thank you very much for clarifying that. Well, my question is then, if the Carnegie Institute was planning for World War One, or as far as how to involve the United States into this world conflict, is there a link between the Masonic Order and the Great Foundations?
All right, so what's you got the question.
I'll listen on the air.
Okay, thanks, Tony. Did you get the question, John?
Yes, there is a link. I haven't been able to find the link directly to Freemasonry, but it is linked to the Round Tables, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, all of which are arms, semi-secret arms of English Freemasonry.
Andrew Carnegie was involved with the occult. I don't know if he was a Mason, but he certainly was involved with the occult, as was Henry Ford, as were so many of these key people. Now, how can I make that statement? Well, if you could read the book Spiritual Politics, and if you get the book by Kathleen, her name is McLaughlin, Corrine McLaughlin, and Gordon Davison, I think it is, fascinating, because it's written from the occultist point of view, and they point out that Carnegie was involved with the occult. And, of course, the occultic view has always been to create this world government. And the same was true with Henry Ford, which is why Henry Ford financed Adolf Hitler. You remember, he had the Ford motor plants there, and he got the highest award that any civilian could get from Adolf Hitler. But he also built the Gorky motor plant in Russia. And, he was never going to get any money out of Russia, but he was building up the Russian society. Because, of course, this was a stepping stone towards world government, and it doesn't make any sense unless you understand that Henry Ford himself was deeply involved with the occult. And then, of course, it all begins to make sense, and all the little parts begin to fall in together.
The interesting thing about Henry Ford, and after he got that great honor by the Nazis, he was a 32nd degree Mason at that time, and after he got that honor, he was given the 33rd degree Mason in Northern Jurisdiction of Freemasonry.
Isn't that interesting?
Yes.
And, of course, what about the Rockefellers? Is there any tie of the Rockefellers into Masonry?
I can't find any direct involvement in Freemasonry. They are into the occult. They are members the satanic group here in the United States.
You're not talking about the Lucius Trust.
Lucius Trust.
Okay.
They're a member of the Lucius Trust.
Some of them certainly are.
Right.
In fact, it was Lawrence Rockefeller's Fund for the Advancement of the Humanities that financed the book written by Barbara Marx Hubbard, The Revelation, the Book of Co-Creation, where she called for killing a quarter of the world's population, those defective seeds who could not evolve to a higher consciousness. And you'll find that quoted in my book, Sustainable Development. We'll even send you the pages from her book if you send a self-addressed stamped envelope. This is the original manuscript that was not copyrighted. And, of course, she calls these people who will not evolve, the defective seeds who will have to be killed. That's not your job, my dear. That's ours, for we are the riders of the pale horse, death.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep, and all today it's called the New Age Movement.
Right.
And I have two chapters in Scarlet and the Beast, the Volume 1, of how Freemasonry created the New Age Movement.
Well, could you get into that? Because I think that is probably one of the most important aspects of this whole incredible story.
Yes. Let me make sure that I got the two chapters in mind there, and look at my notes here.
Actually, of course, the magazine that the Masons published up until, I guess, what, about the late 1980s was known as the New Age Magazine.
Right.
And then, of course, as the New Age movement began to take off, they just changed the name to the Scottish Rite Magazine.
Right, that was done in 1991, it was changed to the Scottish Rite because of the exposure by Fisher of the New Age magazine.
Now, who was Fisher and what was that expose? I've never heard about that.
Fisher.
Paul Fisher.
Yeah,
And his
Fisher.
Book, Behind the Lodge Door.
Yeah, Behind the Lodge Door. I was trying to think Behind the Green Door, but it's Behind the Lodge Door, the song Behind the Green Door. But Fisher exposed the New Age magazine, and so they changed to the Scottish Rite in 91. But in chapter 14, I document that Lucifer is the god of Freemasonry, and in chapter 15, I document Freemasonry and the New Age movement, how it got it started through what I call sublodges. In chapter 16, the New Age movement unites English and French Freemasonry, and that was partly through the UN, the United Nations. But in 1889, there was in Paris, France, there was a great union of the atheists, the spiritists, the Luciferians, and Freemasonry. All four were meeting in their annual conference, and they united there in Paris, France, that particular year. After that particular year, they started in England what I call sub-lodges. It was lodges that did not contain the name Freemasonry, but all of them founded by either 32nd or 33rd degree Masons.
Now, that was the same year that the Socialist International was, the Second Socialist International was formed, as I remember.
Right.
Is there any tie-in between Masonry and the Socialist International?
You bet. They were meeting in Paris, France, at that same particular time, and if I'm not mistaken, the lady's name that took over after Blavatsky.
Annie Besant.
And Annie Besant spoke to that group. She was one of the key speakers at that Internationale.
Well, she had been a member of the original Fabian Socialist movement,
right.
And it was such a. Most people think these socialists are atheists, but of course among the leaders, many times they were involved in the occult. And it was Annie Besant from the Fabian Socialist who then became the disciple of Madame Blavatsky, came to run the Theosophical Occults, the Luciferian organization, up until the time she died and Alice Bailey took over.
Right. And all of this was created out after or just before that movement. They created what is called the Quator Coronada Lodge of Masonic Research in England. And from that then came all of these sub-societies, the OTO, the Aleister Crowley's group came out of that. And from this, then nothing could be blamed on Freemasonry because these names did not contain the name Freemasonry.
How about the Order of the Golden Dawn? Was that
Order of the Golden Dawn was founded in 1887 by one 32nd degree Mason and one 33rd degree Mason.
Okay, and of course this then is another one of these subterranean occult movements, which has played such an important part in the unfolding of the world's history.
Right, Aleister Crowley ended up controlling that particular organization. He was the most evil Luciferian in the world. He was a 33rd degree Mason, incidentally, and all your British rock stars today hold him up as their god.
Right. Well, now, as this whole incredible thing has unfolded, what was the position of the Masonic movement towards the separation of church and state? In other words, getting God or Christianity out of our schools and acknowledgement of the Christian foundations of America removed from contemporary society.
You've got to go all the way back to the French Revolution to understand that. The French Revolution is the first to, in their revolutionary movement and in their constitution, outlawed church and state, and used that specific name to outlaw church and state. They didn't say religion and state. They said church and state. Likewise, in the Bolshevik Revolution in 1917, in their constitution, there was a separation of church and state. In our nation, there was freedom of religion. There was no separation of church and state. There was no separation of state and religion at all. And what happened was, when Franklin Delano Roosevelt, a 32nd degree Mason, became president, he started stacking the Supreme Court with his buddy Masons. And I didn't say bloody, I said buddy, his buddy Masons. And by the time 1945, there were six of the nine justices were his Scottish Rite Masons, and remained the majority on the Supreme Court until 1973. So it was that majority of Masons that outlawed Bible and prayer in our schools.
That's almost 28 years they controlled our Supreme Court when these most dramatic changes in all the recorded history took place within our society.
Right. And it was one of those justices, Justice Jackson, who made the statement that when the Supreme Court said that the thought of our founding fathers, the intent of our founding fathers in that First Amendment of freedom of religion, said their intent was separation of church and state. Mm-hmm. And when Justice Jackson was asked, questioned why that, he says the Constitution is what we judges, Supreme Court justices, say it is. And so it was a treasonous act, to be quite frank, in doing that. But it's interesting that it isn't separation of religion and state, it's separation of church and state. So the occult is taught in our school systems because of that.
Well, of course, the interesting thing is our young people are told to make choices on their own for what they want to do. Mm-hmm. And when they think they're ready to have sex, they should have it. When they want to smoke or do these other things, they have to learn how to make intelligent choices. And that's exactly what Aleister Crowley taught. Do what thou wilt. That is the whole of the law. And, of course, our activities have to be based upon, not upon our law, not upon our morality, but God's morality. And freedom is not the ability to do whatever you want to do. It's the ability to do what you should do according to God's law. And that is never taught in our schools today. We're teaching Crowleyism and, right. and Satanism and our, the basic philosophy of Satanism.
That's right. But Dr. Monteith, it was planned that way. They are willing to destroy a whole generation of children for the express purpose of wiping out Christianity.
I read the most amazing article a couple of days ago. There was a, in Southern California, there was a young man who was shooting at people driving along the highways. And he shot at about 80 people. And he was finally picked up. And, I mean, he was a 22 or 23-year-old college student, an intelligent, a very nice-looking young man. And his comment was, and I don't know how many people he killed in the process of doing this, the highway shooter. And he said, you know, why are you criticizing me? He said, most of you, would be fantasizing doing exactly the same thing. After all, I put very little value in human life. Mm-hmm. And I thought, how could a young man in America today take an attitude that human life is unimportant? And then, of course, if you see what he's being taught in school, it's all right to abort children. It's all right to kill off the elderly. There is no God. There's no absolutes. You make your own decisions. Then you begin to understand that we've destroyed a whole generation of our youth.
Right. We have been desensitized by the rock and roll music and by Hollywood movies.
And, of course, one of the more interesting things is the effect of the video games on the minds of our youth. You can teach them how to kill very easily. They do it all the time in the arcades with a gun shooting somebody, and they fall over and they're dead. These are the same men who may well be the soldiers who will be marching through our strutting through our streets before long, of course, maintaining order as imposed by the authoritarian society, who will think nothing at all about shooting Americans. In fact, in that questionnaire that was given to the Marines at 29 Palms by their commanders asking me if they would be willing to shoot American citizens if they wouldn't give up their weapons, and I think 27% of them said they'd be quite willing to shoot fellow Americans.
Right.
And I think that's frightening, and yet that's the end result of what has happened in our society, and we've allowed it to happen.
Yeah, and the other frightening thing is our nation's backing of the UN. What I saw something two nights ago on the news that was extremely frightening. These UN peacekeepers.
Oh, yes, I saw the Dateline.
Torture, right? Torture, and rape.
And nothing was ever done to them.
And nothing was ever done with them.
Even the one who was roasting the little boy over the fire.
Exactly.
And they actually showed those pictures of them roasting the little boy over the fire, and, of course, nothing was ever done to them.
Now, what's going to happen is, you see, our military cannot take up arms against our people, but the UN can. And the UN is putting foreign troops on our bases throughout this land. And when our government is ready to take over and destroy our freedom, it's going to be the UN soldiers, and there's going to be murder and rape done by them.
Well, that's exactly what they said in this this Dateline documentary. There was murder and rape and torture carried out by the United Nations soldiers, but the United Nations had no means of disciplining them,
right.
and nothing was ever done. So you have nothing to fear from the United Nations, because you know they're not going to discipline their irresponsible soldiers.
Right.
Or sort of like boys will be boys,
mm-hmm.
and yet we are sending our boys to be United Nations soldiers. In fact, we're financing most of the United Nations so-called peacekeeping operations, which are simply a means of imposing our will on nations throughout the world. And if we pay to do that one day, can we have anything to complain about if our freedom is taken away from us, as we've taken away freedom from other people in other countries?
Nope, it's going to happen here when we're letting it happen, because
now,
we've got our head in the sand.
And, of course, one of the things is, hasn't it always been the objective of the world Masonic and world occult movement to create a one-world government under the rule of the Antichrist?
Right. And the thing is, this is nothing more than the war that Lucifer, Satan, warred against God to take over his throne. When he was cast out of heaven, the only place that he can take over now is earth.
But, you know, one of the things that really bothers me is that our churches aren't speaking out against the United Nations. I mean, anybody with half an ounce of intelligence should be able to see that the United Nations is to be the world government of the Antichrist. And where's the outcry? Where is the outrage from our religious leaders?
The whole thing is that our founding fathers, the symbol of the Illuminati, which is on the left side on the back of our $1 bill, it says announcing the birth, in Latin, it says announcing the birth of a new world order. The purpose of the United States was founded by Freemasonry to see if 13 nations could unite under one federal government without warring with each other. And if that could be successful, then they could unite the whole world likewise. That's the whole purpose of the United States. This United States was the catalyst. Now, this wasn't known, but just that inner core of Freemasonry. The United States was the catalyst to bring upon this world a united nations, united world.
If you read the book Spiritual Politics, Corrine McLaughlin and Davidson break this very, very clearly, that the occultists have always looked upon the United Nations, the United States as the vehicle that would bring about this one world order. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the writings of Manly Hall, one of the world's leading occultists, made that point. America, the secret destiny of America was to lead the world into this one world government. But, you know, my impression has always been that there were two parallel forces at work here. One was the Christian force, which motivated many of our founding fathers and many of the people who were here in America for such a long period of time. And then this occult force, which certainly had infiltrated the upper echelons of our government, got their people to design the front and back of the Great Seal of the United States, which today we see on the dollar bill, and the competition between these two forces, and of course the constant effort to keep the occult influence down, and then eventually, of course, with the presidency of Franklin Delano Roosevelt and the Masonic influence, and then the following president, 33rd degree Harry Truman, with this Masonic impetus, the Christian influence began to wane and the occult influence began to wax. Would you agree or disagree with that?
No, I agree with that. And this is totally prophetic. In the book of Isaiah, I don't have the scripture right now. I think it's in chapter 59. In the book of Isaiah, the prophet says, and this is God speaking through the prophet, I will set up my standard in the West before Satan comes in. Before Satan comes in. So the church came to America first before Satan came in and took over like a flood. That's what the way the scripture states it.
And I think that's really so true, and I think people have to understand the satanic influence that has infiltrated every aspect of our society today. Now, how does this whole Masonic movement tie into the formation of the European Common European Government and the establishment of the European currency as you see it unfolding?
This is another interesting prophetic aspect. Of course, this was the whole purpose of Freemasonry, was to unite the world. It wasn't any problem with uniting the United States because it never had a kingdom. The problem is uniting Europe. First of all, they had to throw out the kings and then set up the democracies. But the problem is uniting Europe. It wasn't a big problem here in the United States because one of the first things Congress did was, what language are we going to speak here? And so the question was it going to be German or was it going to be English? And by one vote, it was voted to be English. And so it's easy to unite a people when they all speak the same language.
And easy to divide them when you have several languages, which is
right.
Why they're encouraging the just rapid influx of so many immigrants and so many of them Spanish-speaking, because they want to create in America exactly what they've created in Canada with the French and the English-speaking. Divide and conquer is the old adage, and they're so good at it.
The interesting thing, a prophetic part of this in Europe, is the Eurocorps, the monetary system in Europe. The Bible said there will be 10 nations involved in this. Today, there are 11 nations that are ready to, that as of the first of this year, supposedly started with the euro dollar. England opted out until 2002, and so we have 10 nations over there with that one currency.
Isn't that a coincidence? Well, we'll be back here in just a moment or two with the last half hour of our fascinating conversation with John Daniel. Give us a call at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Here's the man who's researched this, done a great, great job. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course, this is the time of our program that we have to remind you we're listener supported. And quite frankly, I don't like asking people for money, but if we don't ask, you're not going to know that we need your help to expand our ministry across the nation. And we really need to get on major stations across America. We're not going to go out on a limb. Exciting things have happened. We do now have the funding for 6 months on a major station in San Francisco. We've got to be sure that we can pay for that before we move on. We're not going to go out on a limb, but your help and the help of others who believe in America and are willing to make a sacrifice, hopefully we're going to gradually, step by step, expand our ministry across America. So if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us to get the message of freedom out and the understanding of the spiritual nature of the battle in which we're involved, give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and say, I want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And you can, if you'd like to, for a suggested gift of $20 a month or more, you'll get our four best tapes and you'll get our newsletter. And we encourage you to copy everything we have and get it out. And then, of course, to help us as best you can, because we need your help so that we can reach people across America. As I mentioned in the first hour, we had a state assemblyman call me today as administrative aide and ask for some information. We'd mentioned in our last newsletter, which we're sending out to key people across the country, and he asked for certain specific things. We're going to send him those and other things, and the aide commented that they had a lot of supporters in their area, and they'd get our information to them. So that's, of course, what we do, and your financing and your help goes to help us to be able to send these things out to some people for nothing. If we can get it into the hands of a man like this assemblyman, he's going to be able to reach literally hundreds of other people if we can convince him of the true nature of the spiritual battle in which we're currently engaged. Again, the telephone number, if you'd like to become part of the Radio Liberty family, if you'd like to be part of something, an organization that's doing something to try to save America, give us a call, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, our address, Post Office Box 13 in Santa Cruz, 95063. That's Post Office Box 13 in Santa Cruz, 95063, or, of course, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Okay, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, our telephone number 464-8295, or out across America, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, and right now we have Doug on the line. Hi, Doug, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, how you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Yeah, I was calling that, I pretty much had an impression that, like, George Washington and, Thomas Jefferson, those guys were Freemasons.
Well, certainly George Washington was, but the Masonry that he believed in had not become occultic at all. The occult influence came into America much, much later after Washington. In fact, if you read Washington's writings as he's an older man, he warned against the influence of the Illuminati and these other influences, which he recognized were coming into Masonry. And although as a young man he did attend the lodges, apparently he attended very seldom after that. Would you comment on that, John?
Yes. He, in the United States, was both the French and the English lodges. George Washington joined an English lodge before the Revolution, and during the Revolution they turned all the British lodges into American lodges. They severed their relationship with the English lodges, and George Washington never set foot in a British lodge after that. He remained a Freemasonry. He never renounced Freemasonry. He corresponded with Masons. He loved Freemasonry because of its democracy and because of its force in bringing our nation into power. But he was also made aware of the infiltration of American Freemasonry by the European Illuminati. And just before his death, he warned the Americans to get rid of the lodges because of this cancer of the Illuminati. He loved the lodges, but he knew that the Illuminati was Luciferian and that it was nothing but evil. So he recommended the closure of the lodges because of that.
Okay, and now as far as Thomas Jefferson is concerned, Doug, Thomas Jefferson was certainly a deist. He was never a Christian. John, was Jefferson, do we actually know for certain he was a member of the Masonic Lodge?
Thomas Jefferson is claimed by Freemasonry. In Washington, D.C., he is shown in one of the buildings there with his Masonic apron on. I've not found any documentation where he was a Mason. However, he was a member of the Columbian Illuminati Lodge. And John Adams accused Thomas Jefferson of furthering the work of the Illuminati in the United States.
And, of course, for a time there was a great feud between Jefferson and Adams, and eventually they sort of made up as they got to be older, didn't they?
Yes, yeah, and they were... I think they both died on July 1st,
July 4th.
And they were trying to one outlast the other in that.
Well, of course, I think as Adams was dying, the story is told, he said, how is Thomas Jefferson? Is he still alive? And they said yes, and he said, then the Republic lives on.
Yes.
And I think, Doug, you have to understand that Jefferson was a brilliant man. I mean, we owe him a great deal for his Declaration of Independence, but what he had done was crystallized in the Declaration, the writings of a number of Christian authors. Because, you see, all the literature on freedom up to that time, most of it came from Christian writers. And
absolutely,
whether it be the writings of Samuel Rutherford, who had written Lex Rex, The Law is King, where he said that all men were created equal, or whether he was quoting Blackstone and John Locke, these ideas of nature's God and nature's law. All of the ideas that he put forward in the Declaration had come from Christian writers, because it was the Christian writers at that time who were talking about the fact that since we were all created in sin, why should the king who was created in sin be able to rule the rest of us? God had given us freedom, and we were entitled to freedom, and that was the basic thrust of the Declaration. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, among which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But Thomas Jefferson could never accept the divinity of Jesus Christ.
I know.
He could accept his ministry.
Yeah.
He could accept that he had a wonderful philosophy of love of your fellow man and not striking back in anger. But act for all the foundation of Christianity is the divinity of Jesus Christ, not the fact that he had a good philosophy. So this was one of Thomas Jefferson's major defects, and why the difference between he and Washington as far as slavery.
Right.
Jefferson was against slavery, but upon his death he released, I don't know, 4 or 8 of his slaves. George Washington not only released all of his slaves, but endowed their possibility of getting an education so they could leave not simply as laborers but as free men in a free society. Washington was much more of a moralist than Thomas Jefferson was. But that's all I can really tell you, Doug.
All right. Thanks.
Okay, fine. Thank you. And our telephone number, 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Give us a call if you have a question or comment, because I think that John Daniel certainly knows more about this subject than just about anyone else in the country. Now, one of the things, of course, which has always been used to throw people off the track, to try to confuse them about what this world movement is the protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. And, of course, this then is used by racists and bigots to push anti-Semitism. But what is the true origin of the protocols? Because this is seminal to understanding what's going on today in this move towards world government.
The protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion is spelled not with a Z, but with an S. It is a French publication. It was stolen from a French lodge in 1884, and it was sold, in fact, it was stolen by a Mason, and it was sold and carried to Russia.
And what you're suggesting, then, this is the Masonic plan rather than...
Right, it's Masonic. It is the priory, it's the group of the priory. In fact, it was stolen from a priory of Zion Lodge.
Okay.
S-I-O-N.
And of course, this, then, is this whole movement that you've been discussing, the so-called Rosicrucian?
Right. And it has
Masonry, right.
Yes, it has nothing to do with Zionism, Z-I-O-N, which is what is in Israel today, the political movement of Zionism, which actually started in Russia in 1860 and had their first Zionist meeting in 1897. But the Priory of Zion then was carried into Russia by the OTO Lodge, the Ordo Templar Orientis, the Ordo Templar Orientis Lodge, and it was used as an anti-Masonic or anti-Jewish document to start the pogroms, to accuse the Jews of writing this, and they had nothing to do with it.
And of course, it was really I've always felt, and I'd like to know your opinion, that what it really was sort of a smokescreen behind which this whole world occult movement could continue to grow, because people would begin to see this world revolutionary movement and say, somebody's got to be behind it.
Yeah.
And what better group to blame than Jews, so that the real occultic foundation of the world revolutionary movement would not be recognized. And also because the occultists always hate the Jews.
Right. And as you look at the real power behind these secret societies, it's Satan. And Satan does not want God's people here on earth. And that is the Christians and the Jews. And so what he does is he weaves this around so that the world then is against Christianity and against Judaism.
And of course, that was really the main reason behind Hitler's anti-Semitism was
right.
Because of his occult connections. And although they pushed the protocols in Hitler's Germany, it was really the occultism of the Nazi movement that was responsible for the anti-Semitism, not the protocols as such.
Mm-hmm.
But they had to circulate that among the people to justify what they were doing. And
I think absolutely.
All of these things are so vitally important that people begin to understand. Now, what influence does Masonry have in the media in the United States today?
Total control. I say total control. Fox News is so young, I can't make any connection, but ABC, CBS, and NBC are all Masonic controlled, and their symbol is the all-seeing eye.
Well, that's, of course, CBS is the symbol of the all-seeing
it's
eye.
It's obvious, but
right.
The others are the NBC,
Peacock
right. Is, you've got the all-seeing eye all over the peacock feathers, not in their symbol, but that's your analogy. And then you have the Sun Disc on ABC, which is a stylized all-seeing eye.
And now, of course, let's see. These are really controlled by Time Warner, by Disney, Westinghouse, Time Warner controls CNN, GE, Time Warner, GE, Disney, and General Electric control the other three.
Yeah, but you go all the way, that's today, but you go all the way back to their roots, and it was Masonic control. Now, document this in my book. I have a whole chapter on the Masonic control of the media.
But, of course, what's the influence of the Masonic movement within Westinghouse, Disney, and General Electric today? Do you have any ties on that?
No, once you get that far removed, you don't have to have those particular organizations directly tied to Freemasonry, just like the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission. You can't make a direct connection to it, but the people that are in control of it know exactly what their duty is in this, and that is to control or manipulate or create public opinion.
All right, and of course, that's the great tragedy we have today. I think there are about 200 members of the Council on Foreign Relations are working within the media. And according to Richard Harwood in his classical article, entitled Ruling Class Journalists, which occurred in, was printed in the Washington Post on the 30th of October, 1993, he said, this is the closest thing we have to a ruling establishment. Those people working within the media don't necessarily report the news. They make it happen. And then he went on to quote John Van den Heuvel, something of the sort, stating that basically by focusing public opinion on certain issues, they can force a government to accede to their demands. And that's really what it's all about.
Yeah, this is what the polls are for.
Sure. And of course, right. And we're constantly being manipulated by a media which is largely controlled by people who do have an agenda. Mm-hmm. And you try to get articles that really tell a true story. Sometimes they'll come under tremendous pressure, or they'll simply spike the stories. Mm-hmm. Now, basically, what about the Luciferian connection? Do you think that the average individual who's involved with these lodges and movements really understands that this is truly Luciferian and is part of the devil's plan to take over the world?
No, they don't know that. They're kept ignorant. In fact, Albert Pike even says that in his Luciferian book, Morals and Dogma. He says the blue degrees, and the blue degrees are the first three degrees, the blue degrees are but the outer court or portico of the temple. Part of the symbols are displayed there to the initiate, but he is intentionally misled by false interpretations. It is not intended that he shall understand them, but it is intended that he shall imagine he understands them, and whosoever attempts to undeceive them will labor in vain. So it's a deception. The first degree, they put a hoodwink, a black hood over their head. Hoodwink, you look it up in the dictionary, and it's a deception. And so if they look at the symbols, they are deceived from the very first degree on. And by degree, they're given a little more light, a little more light. And by degree, it's just like putting a frog in hot water, it's going to jump out. But if you put it in cold water, and then you put it on the oven and turn up the heat, the frog will just lay there and boil because he doesn't feel it. And that's what's happening to Freemasonry, Masons. By degree, they are led into Luciferianism, anti-Christian doctrine.
And, of course, what they learn eventually is the source of the light, who they are required to search for,
right,
in the first and second and third degrees. And as they go along, and they're always searching for the light, and not until they get to a certain point and begin to study do they begin to understand the true source of that light, who is the angel of light, Lucifer.
Right. And Albert Pike, even in Morals and Dogma, and every third degree Mason is given his book, Morals and Dogma. And here's what he writes about Lucifer in this book. He says, the apocalypse is, to those who receive the 19th degree, the apotheosis of that sublime faith which aspires to God alone and despises all the pomps and works of Lucifer. Lucifer, the light bearer, strange and mysterious name to give to the spirit of darkness, Lucifer, the son of the morning, is it he who bears the light and with its splendors intolerable blinds feeble, sensuous, and selfish souls? Doubt it not.
And that's page 321 of Morals and Dogma, and we've got Rory on the line. Hi, Rory.
Hi, Dr. Stan. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Great. Hey, just a quick side note to the people in the media elite that are Masons. I had run across a article. I didn't read it, but I was waiting to get my hair cut. And it was Fortune magazine, I believe. And it was recent, this past year, 98. Anyway, there was a whole article on Brian Williams, who is, I believe, the heir apparent of Brokaw.
I don't know.
I forget which network he's with. I think it's ABC. Anyway, the cover picture, or the initial photograph of him in the article, he's wearing a suit and he's got his arms crossed, and his right cufflink is very apparent. It's pretty easily the spot, and right on that cufflink is the five-point star. Mm. And I couldn't make out the insignia on the star, but it's pretty obvious as to what it is. And I just thought that was interesting to see that symbolism displayed so prominently by him in a prominent photograph.
I think there's just so many things out there, you know, that people should begin to pick up. When you talked about that, I thought there was going to be the triangle with the all-seeing eye in it.
No, it was the five-pointed star, and you know, I believe it's a tip-off. I think that's how these guys, you know, let each other know who's who, where, and you know, who's.
It is. Yeltsin tipped off the world that he was a Mason by wearing cufflinks, which was the square and the compass.
Oh, no kidding.
Yes, I've got that picture.
No wonder he's getting so much money out of the American taxpayers. Right.
Anyway, that's all I had, and it's a fascinating listen, and God bless you and your guest.
Thanks so much, Roy.
Take care.
Fine. And, okay, our telephone number, 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY, if you're out there. We're just about drawing to the end of the program, so if you've got a question, you better get it in now. And I was just thinking, as Roy was telling that, about that wonderful movie. I don't know if you ever saw it, John. It was called The Man Who Would Be King, with Sean Connery, and it was about these explorers off somewhere, the Himalayas or Tibet, one of them is wearing this Masonic symbol. Of course, this is a book written by Rudyard Kipling, who himself is a Mason, and the Sean Connery is wearing this triangle with the all-seeing eye in it. And when he gets into this this place that they're looking for, that supposedly has all this wonderful treasure, you know, he's originally captured, and they're thinking about killing him until they see the Masonic symbol, and then they all fall down and worship him because he obviously is the god. He has the symbol of a god. And of course, if any of our listeners have not seen the movie, go down and rent it at your local Blockbuster. The man who would be God, and then you understand the symbolism. If you have the Masonic symbol, of course, you have the key to becoming God.
Mm-hmm.
And really, you know, at the time you see it, and if you don't understand where Rudyard Kipling's coming from, it's just a great movie. And when you understand the real symbology behind it, of course, it's the key to so much of this whole movement towards the establishment of a one-world government, and this belief that Satan gave to Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. If you eat of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge in good and evil, ye shall be as gods, and ye shall never die. And that, of course, is what it's really all about, man replacing God and bringing the kingdom of heaven to earth without God.
On the books, Scarlet and the Beast, are you there?
Yes.
Okay. What you sell on those in the next 7 days are going to be given by John Kriegel Publishing as a donation to your ministry.
Well, thank you so very much. We'll appreciate it. And so our listeners out there, I hope you're listening, I hope you'll want to get Scarlet and the Beast, and it's available if you're calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. It's a very fascinating book because it goes into the English Freemasonry, how banks, the illegal drug trade. I thought that was so fascinating. Do you want to just briefly touch on the illegal drug trade? Because we so many books written now that point out that the illegal drug trade, which we're so supposedly fighting so hard, is actually being fostered by elements within our own government who are not trying to stop the drugs from coming in. They're fighting the war against drugs the way we fought the war in Vietnam. They're fighting to lose. We want to pick up on that?
Yes. The source scripture for that is Revelation chapter 18, verse 23. And it says, about Mystery Babylon, by thy sorceries were the nations deceived. And that word sorceries, it's the only place that it's used in the Bible, is mind-bending, means in the Greek, mind-bending pushers of mind-bending potions. And so this is why Scarlet and the Beast, Scarlet being English Freemasonry, I document in Volume 3 that English Freemasonry controls the growing, manufacturing, and pushing of the worldwide drug traffic.
And, of course, we know that certainly the English did that. That's what the Opium Wars were all about, not to stop opium, but to force it on the Chinese people.
Right.
And, of course, the drug traffic has been used for many years to corrupt and destroy societies, and it's certainly doing a fantastic job of destroying America today.
60% of the world's drug usage, illegal drug usage, is in the United States. So there is another opium war.
Right, but the war is against the American people, and the American people don't even understand that this is being fostered by our own government. And if anybody doubts that, they ought to read that wonderful book, The Secret Life of Bill Clinton by Ambrose Evans Pritchard, which touches on how our government is involved in drugs, or Monica Stevenson's book, the Kiss the Boys Goodbye, or Terry Reid's book, Compromised, or Gary Webb's new book, or Celerino Castillo, Powder Burns. I mean, there's so many, the new book, Defrauding America, but Scarlet and the Beast gets into the background behind. All of these tell you what's happening. Scarlet and the Beast tells you why, and of course it has to do with this whole world occult movement, which is really infecting every aspect of our society today. And through three volumes, I promise you, you'll never look at the world through the same eyes again. Now, of course, you've got, how long did it take you to write this book, these three books?
I started research in college in 1970, understood it by 1972, kept researching, started writing in 1982, and finished writing by 1992. And it went to the editor in 1993, and the first volume came out in 1994.
I'm sure I saw the advertisements for the first edition of that, and I was quite intrigued. I didn't get it, though, until just a couple of years ago. Now, what about banking? How does this whole thing tie into international financiers?
In the third volume, the subtitle of the book is English Freemasonry, Banks, and the Illegal Drug Trade. The banks... You have to understand that this movement, the intent of this movement, is to bring about a one-world government. To be able to do that, they got to control the economy of the world, which means also the banking. And because there's not enough revenue in any nations, or all the nations coupled together, there is not enough revenue to fund this world revolution, to bring in a one-world government, they have opted to the drug trade, where there is no taxation. And we're talking about now upwards to $1 trillion a year income to this occult movement through the drug trade, non-taxable. And the banks now have been set up to accept that since 1978, the banks have been set up in Switzerland to take all illegal funds for their movement. And we're talking about not only the drug movement, but mafia, anything that is illegal. We're talking about gun running. The whole bit is cycled through a bank in Zurich, Switzerland. And when I wrote my book, it was about $500 billion a year. Now it's close to $1 trillion a year income that they use.
And I'm sure that they know exactly who it is. They just don't want the American people to know. John, thank you so much for being with us again. I hope from time to time we can call on you. I think it's fascinating. I think our listeners need to know these facts. The book is available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. It's entitled Scarlet and the Beast. It's three volumes. So it's a lot of heavy reading. It weighs about 5 pounds, but it's well worth it. John, thank you so much. God bless you, and may he keep you safe.
Thank you. The Lord bless you.
And you too. Bye-bye. And this is Dr. Stan saying, pray for our country. Pray for revival in America. And certainly pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And we'll be back with you tomorrow at the same time.